with the 32nd pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've done it. We've reached episode 100 of the Journey to the Draft podcast. Fran, congratulations.
It's been quite a journey.
It certainly has.
I went back and listened to the first episode this morning, and it is terrible. I sounded terrible. We just sounded, we were so green, like it was our first podcast ever. It was, oh man, it was bad.
We should post some highlights
later
on in the week. There has to be a highlight in there.
No.
Who was on the first episode? Was it you, myself, and Bo Wolf?
Mr. Bo Wolf, yes.
Now with The Athletic in Philadelphia.
We had Tony Pauline on as our first guest on the maiden voyage.
Of course.
A lot of talk.
He probably sounds just the same.
Yeah, we talked about Marquis Lee and,
the Meryl Reese special of the 2014
draft. There were a lot of good actors. It was funny going back and listening. We talked about Michael Campanaro to the Eagles at number 22.
Of course.
It was good. It was the end. It was to the week, because this was the coming off, that was the day that we had traded for Darren Sproles. So it's like 4 years to the day, or 3 years to the day.
That's amazing. Almost. It has been a fun ride, and we appreciate all of you fans who have been with us, whether it's from the first episode or you've jumped on just this season. So to give you a preview of what we have in store, we're going to go through the latest news and draft buzz. Not a ton there, because free agency is right on the horizon. We are recording this Monday. It's almost Monday afternoon here at the NovaCare Complex in Philadelphia, so we'll get into the latest news and draft buzz. Our Mr. Irrelevant is Charles Davis, the esteemed analyst from NFL Network, one of our favorite guys. Also is the analyst for some of the Fox games, so we've seen the Eagles throughout the course of the season. Our pick six, this is a Fran Duffy special, players where you need to trust the tape, and this is good coming off the combine.
Yep.
And then we'll get to some of your questions in our draft mailbag. But first up, our draft buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
Fran, as we kick off Draft Buzz here, you won't let it go about that first podcast. You're still talking about
it was rough.
I actually,
you haven't seen what I've seen and heard what I've heard, C-Mac. It was a rough morning.
Oh, we'll somehow make our segue here into Draft Buzz here. Again, not a lot this week, but I'm going to kick things off here. I want to get on a little bit of a soapbox, okay? We're going to do a little mock draft roundup. And the first one I'm going to go to is Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. And he has Jamarco Jones, the tackle from Ohio State, going to the Eagles at 32. And this has nothing to do with the selection, okay? I don't know what your thoughts are on Jones. We can get that in a second, Fran. But I at least appreciate that Steve, some of his picks were very outside the box. They're not what you're seeing from other media outlets. For the most part, at this point in the process, you almost see a groupthink in terms of where players are going to go. And most of those players are going to be roughly in the right area, which is tremendous work on their part, because there are guys who do this all year round, trying to gather all the information. Guys like yourself, Fran, who studies this nonstop. But there are going to be some surprises. There are going to be some guys who are valued much higher in the NFL community than in the DraftNet community. But looking at the mentions on PFF's timeline, on Steve's timeline, after he released the mock draft, he's getting crushed because, like, this is the worst mock draft I've ever seen. It's probably just because it's different more than anything else, because there are some names. The receiver from Colorado State, I've not heard Gallup mentioned as a first-round pick anywhere. You know what? Maybe he's a surprise, because there really isn't a consensus number one receiver in this draft class. And just because there are different names, people automatically go, oh, and maybe it's because they didn't like who they selected for their respective teams. But still, I at least like seeing a little bit of a mix, a little bit of a curveball, a bit of a changeup at this point in the process, because otherwise you're really seeing the same 35 or so names just shuffled in different spots.
Well, I think that a large, large majority of people that do the mock drafts in the media are going to do it based off of what they think is going to happen, based off of what they would do. And Steve is certainly doing it off of what Pro Football Focus would do based off of their grades and off of the perceived needs that they have for teams around the league. So they're going off of all of their data that they've collected over the course of the season, both from a player standpoint and from an NFL team standpoint. So, yeah, those names are not going to match up with what you're going to see across the board. But I would say that If you know, if you look, all you have to do is look at like Daniel Jeremiah's top 50, and then look at his most recent mock draft. Those names aren't going to mesh.
Correct.
Just because most of the time when a person does a big board, that's going off their opinion, and then when you go to their mock draft, it's going to be off of what they hear. That's just kind of how most people do it.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I thought you did a great job with your mock draft for Philadelphia.com a week ago.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to do mine. I'm going to wait till free agency kicks off.
That makes sense.
No point in doing a Monday when the league's going to be turned upside down on Wednesday. How did you go through the process? Because over the weekend, I can't get past number one. I sit there and I'm just like, you know, I was like playing with my dog in the backyard. I was playing video games with the kids, and I just be thinking like,
Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Saquon Barkley, who's it
going
to be?
That's what's going through my mind. The name who actually I might put in the mock draft might be Bradley Chubb.
Hmm. Interesting.
Because I'm thinking, why not pair with Myles Garrett and have a phenomenal defense? But that's the thing, is you just don't quite know where what the other teams are thinking at this point in the process. How did you go about it?
I went off of what I think is going to happen, not necessarily what I would do, because I would say that there would be some drastic changes if it was based off of how I view players and what I would do. So,
will you do one like that?
We're going to have to do a couple. We'll see. To be determined.
Okay. But it's funny because, you know, just those first couple of picks, and then the Giants at number two, because I say on one hand, they're not going to be this high again probably for a long time.
Yep.
Giants are typically a pretty good franchise.
They should take a quarterback. But
you would think they should take a quarterback. Right. But do they believe, is all the stuff about Eli and making sure you get the guy with the cleanest evaluation, if that stuff's all true, then they should be taking probably Saquon Barkley.
Yep.
At number two, if he's there.
I mean, the whole idea that Cleveland should pass on a quarterback and wait to just get one at four, quote unquote, just get one at
just
four
get
is
one.
Ridiculous,
yes.
Is ludicrous, but that's a whole other tangent.
All right, let's go through some of the other mock drafts here. Rob Rang from NFL Draft Scout goes with a safety, Alabama's Ronnie Harrison there at number 32.
Yeah, I really like Harrison. A very well-rounded player, probably more of a quote-unquote strong safety type. You know, can play man coverage against the tight end spot. Really good against the run. He's really aggressive. I'd like to see his tackling technique get a little bit better. He didn't miss any tackles, but he'll often go for the big hit, lead with his shoulder instead of trying to wrap up and bring his feet and finish through. But a really impressive guy. Can play deep, can play close to the line of scrimmage. I'm a big fan of Ronnie Harrison. I would like that selection a lot.
Joe Marino from NDT Scouting goes with a running back, Darius Geis, out of LSU at number 32.
Yeah, we talked about that possibility last week with Josh Norris. Yep. That was his pick for the Eagles in his latest mock draft. You know, Darius Geis, we talked to him at the Combine, and who is his own player comparison for himself? Marshawn Lynch. That's how he kind of sees his running style transitioning to the NFL. Very competitive, angry runner, and he had a pretty good Combine as well.
And another running back, different style though, Lance Zierlein from NFL.com, who does the hundreds and hundreds of,
yes,
scouting reports, does outstanding work. We have to get him here on the podcast
in
the next couple of weeks. Ronald Jones out of USC is his first round pick.
Lance Zierlein was the first to say that the Eagles were going to make the trade up to Carson Wentz back in 2016.
Really?
Wasn't that on the podcast? It was on the podcast. It was after we traded up to 8.
Because I was not on that week.
No, you were not. It was me and Alex. And he said, yeah, they're not done. They're going to trade up to number 2, and they're going to take Carson Wentz. It was like weeks before it happened. It was outstanding.
And your jaws are like...
And we were like...
What do we do?
But Ronald Jones, yeah, is a really intriguing player. I've seen a lot of comparisons to the kid from Kansas City, Jamal Charles from the Kansas,
yep,
City Chiefs, who obviously had a lot of success under Doug Peterson when he was the offensive coordinator there. Explosive back, 6 feet tall. He's got one of the more improved backs this season in college football. I thought that he really took the next step from 2016 to 2017.
All right, so a little something different here on Draft Buzz. It's a time of year where all the test scores have come in from the combine, we're starting to get from the pro days, and we now see the infamous spider charts,
yes,
popping up on Mock Draftable.
Love them.
Three Sigma Athlete has their spark scores of how a player's athleticism compares to others in the NFL, how that stacks up, and that's something that's important to gauge when selecting players here. But you want to go through some comps here of this year's draft class. And one thing you note, that it's rare to see these comps come all together, and there's a former Eagle who comes up here.
Yeah, so like because there's so many different ways. It's not just like size, athleticism. That's what the spider chart's based off, right? It's just all the measurables. And it's not just that, though, when you're talking about a player comparison, because you know, you might get to football traits. What does a quarterback's arm look like? You know, his accuracy or a running back's vision. Then there's the usage and the role. I might watch a player and say, you know what, like a Rashawn Golden, the defensive back from Tennessee. I like the kid, but I'm like, all right, he's a safety who's going to be a big nickel. He's going to be used a lot like Corey Graham, how Corey Graham was used throughout his career. He's going to get drafted higher than Corey Graham was. I'm not saying he's Corey Graham, but that's how I see his usage at the next level. And then there's the quality of the player. You know, you compare, that's how you can compare a Saquon Barkley to an Ezekiel Elliott or a Todd Gurley or a Leonard Fournette, because they're all top five quality type of running backs. So, you know, to me, it's really hard to see something where it all comes together. And the one that always comes to mind was Eric Rowe, was the Eagles' second-round pick in 2015.
That was correct.
Yeah, so 2015. 2016, the following season, there was the corner from Maryland, Sean Davis. And I remember from watching Sean Davis back in that summer, I said, man, he reminds me a lot of Eric Rowe. He had the usage that was very similar. Both played corner and safety. They go to the combine. They test almost identically. The measurables came back almost identically. I thought the usage was going to be very similar at the NFL level. The area that they were going to get drafted, everything was just a mirror match. And it's just so rare that happens. That's why player comparisons are difficult and dangerous at times as well.
Because it also factors into, I shouldn't say this factors into the evaluation or the comparison. It all depends on where the player gets drafted.
Yeah.
No question. The scheme, the environment. You know, what he's asked to do from day one. Some guys have the luxury of being drafted and they can learn behind veterans, or guys are thrown into the fire, and that drastically alters the growth learning curve into the NFL.
Yeah, I'll watch Calvin Ridley, and I watch him run, and I watch him run routes, and I watch him get open. There are a lot of similarities to Nelson Agholor, And I think if you ask people right now, hey, if you knew you were going to get Nelson Agholor, that from the 2017 version of it, is that player worth a first-round pick? I think a lot of people would say, yeah. And so you look at Calvin Ridley, and you say, yeah, if that's what you're going to get, is a Nelson Agholor type of player, yeah, you're talking about him in the first round. Even though he's not 6'4", he's not 210 pounds, he's not running 4'3", like an A.J. Green or Calvin Johnson, he's still worthy of that kind of comparison. You know, you look around, Josh Jackson, the corner from Iowa, to Marcus Peters. To me, the play style is very, very similar. They'll probably get drafted in similar areas. Yeah. I think their strengths and weaknesses are pretty similar. Obviously, it's not perfect. The athletic comparisons aren't perfect, but I think in terms of style, I think it's very similar. Minkah Fitzpatrick, safety who can come down, play in the box. He can play in the slot, use a lot of different ways, exactly how the Eagles use Malcolm Jenkins. So, yeah, the size and everything is not identical, but in terms of usage, that's kind of how I view it. So that's why the player comparisons, I think, are very interesting. The spider charts are phenomenal, and it might even spark something in you where you say, like, oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's a pretty good comparison. And then that might kind of lead you down the rabbit hole of other ways that you can kind of compare these players.
It's all part of the process.
Exactly right.
It goes back to, you know, some people critique Pro Football Focus. I think it's just part of the evaluation process.
Right.
It's just another tool to use, a different perspective, a way to use things. Any other interesting player comparisons? I know you went through this exercise before the combine,
yes.
So you're strictly going off play style,
yes.
Really, for that.
Correct.
So how different is it now that you're seeing the measurables and how that matches up with players?
I've seen a few of them pop up that have been pretty similar. It was interesting to see Gesicki test it, because a lot of people didn't think Gesicki was going to test well enough to get that Zach Ertz comparison, but now that he's
certainly
tested so well, he actually tested better than Zach did at the combine. Now people are, I think it's a little bit easier to throw that around. The other one is Kalen Ballage and David Johnson. The running back from Arizona State, Kalen Ballage, big, explosive kid that can get down the seam and impact the passing game. David Johnson was that kind of guy from Northern Iowa. I think the on-field traits are very similar. I think the size and speed are very similar. We'll see if he ends up being that kind of pro, because the big question with Johnson was his vision. Ballage, that's the big knock on him, so we'll see. That's usually a hit-or-miss kind of thing.
All right, so a different edition of Draft Buzz. We're going to get into a totally different Mr. Relevant. Charles Davis, the esteemed analyst for NFL Network, delivers great knowledge. We're going to have a fun conversation ahead right now with Mr. Davis.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
I am really excited to this interview, Fran. One of my favorite guys in the business, our Mr. Relevant. He's Mr. Relevant each and every day of the week, but even more so because he's our guest here on the Journey to Draft podcast. That's the one and only Charles Davis from NFL Network. You can follow him on Twitter at CFD22 and follow his coverage of the NFL Draft on NFL Network leading up to the end of April. Does a phenomenal job, and he just also happens to be the voice of the Madden football franchise, the analyst for those games, and he calls a couple Eagles games every year for Fox. So he certainly knows the draft, and he knows the Philadelphia Eagles, and coming off the combine, we figured he's the perfect guest. And Charles, to kick things off here, you got to watch the combine, did a phenomenal job with your coverage in Indianapolis there for NFL Network. Who are some of the guys now that after the timing and testing drills that you're excited to go back and watch more film of and kind of take a second look at or a third look at?
Well, I'll start with a big guy, this kid Austin Corbett out of Nevada. I mean, he's a heck of a player, and we knew that, but I thought he more than held his own in Indianapolis. And I think he's gaining momentum as a guy that's rising in the draft. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all now that day two, second round, we're going to get his name called. And I'm not sure when we all started this process a couple months ago that that was actually the case. You know, we had to kind of discover him, didn't we? We had to kind of figure him out a little bit. And I thought that he did an excellent job. And he's one. Mike Hughes at UCF, the cornerback, we came in with a lock grade of first round on him. And the whispers, and heck, they weren't even whispers, where they were full conversation, that he was the fastest UCF kid in this draft. And then Shaquem Griffin ran the 4.38, and of course we all, you know, fell in love with the story, and rightly so. But add to it that he ended up running, what, 4.5? You know, I mean, it was like 4.6, somewhere in that neighborhood. So for Mike Hughes, this is a big time now. You know, I thought the pro day would be more of a coronation for him. It reminds me a little bit of Joe Hayden. You guys remember when Joe Hayden had his his combine, and we all thought he was the fastest thing, and he was top 10, and he had the worst combine. Okay, and when I say worst, it's I'm over-exaggerating. But it wasn't anywhere close to what we thought we would see. He had to come back and clean that up 3 weeks later, and he did, and still went in the top 10 in the draft. So, you know, just a couple of guys. I could go on all day with a bunch of other fellows, but just a couple of guys right off the top that are easy pickings for me. And I'm hoping to get over to UCF's Pro Day to see who's running again.
Speaking of UCF, Charles, I want a quick follow-up to a player you mentioned, Shaquem Griffin. And as you said, we all fell in love with the story. Do you think he gets drafted at the end of the day?
I do. I actually do. I don't think that we are in a position now of having to question isn't the right word, because evaluating is questioning, and there's nothing wrong with that. But there's plenty of tape where he's made plays. And then we saw him do it on the big stage, didn't shrink from that at all. In fact, thrived on it. And I think he's a kid who actually likes the lights and likes attention. So I do believe he will. I don't want to shortchange him in terms of what he could be in the NFL, but I will say my immediate thought on him is what a lot of people's are. Special teams demon right out of the gate. Dime linebacker, nickel linebacker, however you want to do it. Figure out, can he actually pass rush from both sides, because he did in college? But will that be an issue without the hand and without the leverage? Can he use it as a long pole and keep people off of him and still get around him the way he did in college? That'll be determined. I know he's going to go through defensive back drills at Pro Day. I don't see him as a safety at all, guys. That's just me. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe he'll turn me around on Pro Day. But I think his best football is playing forward, not retreating. And that's why I think that, you know, you've got to figure out, have a plan for him and turn him loose that way. And I definitely think he could be a heck of a spy. You know, when you've got to spy a quarterback, you know, some of these agile ones, and we're getting more and more of them all the time, I think he fits that bill perfectly. So I do believe he'll get drafted. You know, obviously, I live in Orlando, guys, so the UCF fans are just going crazy. He should be a first rounder. He's the best linebacker. He's this, he's that. I get their enthusiasm. I would say much more like day two. I'm starting with round three, and I'm thinking 3, 4, 5 is where we're at. That's his sweet spot.
Charles, another player that I think kind of fits that bill for a lot of people is the wide receiver from Maryland, DJ Moore. And he's a player that I was really intrigued by going back and watching his film before the combine. He goes out and, to me, had one of the best workouts of all the receivers in Indianapolis. And now I think the chatter is how close is the gap between DJ Moore and Calvin Ridley at the top? And I think it might be a little bit closer than a lot of people think. What are your thoughts on DJ Moore? And is he a guy that you kind of see will be a proverbial riser moving forward throughout the rest of this process?
I like DJ Moore. I like his body. I like the construction of him. He's a strong kid. I think he catches it pretty well, although I do remember one miss. You probably have already seen it on tape, and it was a miss against UCF. You remember that? Where they tried to throw him, I think, a bubble screen, and I thought it was thrown too hard, and it bounced off his hands, and you know who picked it off and returned for a touchdown? Mike Hughes. So it's something that I remember watching and watching what he was doing. But this kid runs good routes, toughness when he catches the football. I love the way he competes for it. I don't know how you guys felt when I watched Ridley's workout. The thing that was most impressive for the day to me was his 40 time. Everything else, I came away asking more questions, you know, a little bit wanting on certain things. You know, is he really that guy? You know, because from what I was watching, I thought there were some question marks that creeped in on me. I don't know how explosive he really was, those sorts of things. So, yeah, I think the gap is narrowing. I'm not taking Ridley totally out of the mix right now and saying, oh, he's not the top guy. But I'm definitely going to want to study some more tape and ask a few more questions.
Charles, sticking with receivers for a second, who are some players? And this doesn't just have to be with wide receivers. There's one that comes to mind for me immediately. But who are some players who you think will have better pro careers than they did in college from a production standpoint? Calvin Ridley can be in that conversation. DJ Chark from LSU, similar to Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry, he's another that comes to mind for me. Who are some players along that mold for you who, you know, were good in college, good enough to get drafted into the NFL, but once they're in the NFL, that you think they'll have better pro careers than they did in college?
Well, I think that you hit the first one who's been the one I've identified and been riding that bandwagon for a few weeks now, and that's DJ Chark. But I think that goes along with LSU being LSU. And look, it's a fantastic program. We know that. The athletes come out of there off the charts. But when you sit down and analyze everything with them, what do you get with receivers? Better pro careers than college careers. Why? Well, it's a run-first offense. And when we say run first, we mean run first. Second part is quarterbacking's been, how do I say that over the last 10 years? Inconsistent? Is that a nice enough word?
Yes.
Okay, but because you know, you guys know me. I'm not the business of capping these kids, but they haven't been those kids. Look, for them, with Les Miles coaching the team, 3rd and 7 was a sprint draw, right? That's what he wanted to run, and let's play some defense and keep going. So you talk about these receivers you see in the NFL, the Jarvis Landrys, the Odell Beckhams. They will have better pro careers and are having better pro careers. I think Chark is the next in a long line of guys. I think that the kid from my alma mater, Tennessee, Rashawn Golden, I think he's going to be a big-time nickel. And part of the reason I say he'll have a better pro career is because in college he was overshadowed for a while, and then last year was such a disaster in terms of wins and losses that it can't help but be better. You know what I mean? So he's a guy that I think that you can look at and say, yep, I think he ends up having a better pro career. I think there's a tailback at Miami that I'm really intrigued by, and that's Mark Walton. And he lost last year with an injury, but before that, did everything for them. Ran it, pass protected, could catch the football. So just because of the lost year, I think he's another guy that we could look at and say, yep, I could see a better pro career for him than maybe in college. And Will Hernandez, it can't help but be better because they went 0-12 last year. But I thought for Hernandez, even though the team went 0-12, here's where he got. Here's where things were good for him. When we talk about Iowa linemen, we talk about how well coached they are. Well, whoever's coaching the offensive line, whether it's a Ferentz now, you know, one of the kids, or even before him, they always had Kirk Ferentz over the top, whose specialty is offensive linemen. So you got the extra coaching, and Kirk took great attention in that area, as you guys know. Well, at UTEP, even though they went 0-12 last year and they fired their coach partway through the season, during the time Hernandez was there, he had his offensive line coach, and his head coach was Sean Coogler, who's now back, what, Buffalo, right, guys? I think he went back to the NFL to be the offensive line coach in Buffalo. So Hernandez got the double coaching as well. So if there's one good thing he can take away from it, he got that, even though the record was just absolutely abysmal.
Charles, I know one of your favorite parts, I know it's certainly one of my favorite parts of evaluating all these players and watching all this film, is trying to find the diamonds in the rough, the gems that no one's really talking about, that you feel a lot stronger about than maybe the consensus. And I know, you know, for me, that's guys like a Derek Nnadi or a Fred Warner, the linebacker from BYU, Kentavious Street from NC State. Do you have any guys that are like that for you that, you know, maybe you're really, really high on, but the consensus overall is not really matching those same expectations you've got in your mind?
Yeah, and, you know, you hit one of them. I think I texted you at the combine, didn't I, about a nice article you'd written about guys that were, where I was like, oh, yeah, way to go. You pulled the Fred Warner on me because you killed me there. That's one that I had in mind. I was like, yep, as usual, way ahead of me. But he would be one. A little slot receiver from Middle Tennessee State named Richie James.
Oh, yeah.
Who lost a bunch of time last year. Remember, he had a collarbone thing. He missed 5 games. Otherwise, his numbers would have been, you know, off the charts because they throw it around. And, look, the head coach of Middle Tennessee State is Rick Stockstill, right? His son Brent was his quarterback. You think he wanted to let Brent pitch it around a little bit? Richie James is one of those that I think people don't know much about. And I think a lot of people have him in the late rounds. But again, another slot that, you know, I'm kind of crazy about. And, you know, within the state, Anthony Miller at Memphis State gets a lot of attention, and deservedly so. What a great, you know, great story. He's the Baker Mayfield of receivers. Walk-on kid, exceeded every expectation, All-American. He gets a chance. I think Richie James could be another one of those guys that could be his equal. I think that the kid out of Fordham is getting a lot more attention now, so I'm not going to make him a riser like that, Chase Edmonds, the tailback. So he's getting all of that. You know, Ito Smith from Southern Miss, every time I turn on the tape, he just makes yardage and makes plays. His size is going to have him bumped way down, but he could be one of those guys that kind of falls through the cracks in the initial days, and you get him in camp and you're like, how come we can't get him on the ground the way we want to? Catches the ball, I think he might have a chance. So those are some of the skill position guys that I really like. Look, up front, the kid from Humboldt State, Alex Kappa, he's no longer a hidden gem, is he? Right? Okay. Everybody's talked about him like crazy. He's come along. I don't know that people talk about Sam Jones from Arizona State enough at guard. You know, I think he's probably going to go day two, day three early and be someone you'll be able to slide in there and play. The Colby Gossett kid from Appalachian State did an excellent job at the Senior Bowl, I thought. So he'd be another guy that I like that's a little bit off the radar. But, you know, radar, you know, and people are going to want to be in business with later on down the line. So those are a few that kind of leap to mind for me.
Charles, since you know both the college game and the pro game so well, we've already seen the trade that Cleveland made to get Tyrod Taylor. What do you expect, or what can you envision in the next week as free agency kicks off, and how do you think that will impact the draft, especially the top of the draft, with those teams that maybe were looking for quarterbacks, maybe they're out of the quarterback market, and how do you think it'll affect the value of those quarterbacks come draft day?
I don't think that move of Tyrod to Cleveland affects anyone's plans at the top, including Cleveland. I think what it affects is, does Cleveland decide to use number one on a quarterback? That's where the discussion kicks in, because to me, prior to Tyrod's move, they had to take a quarterback. Decide who you like, have a conviction about him, take him, for so many different reasons. And everybody wants to tell you that they don't do it because of the fan interest and this, that, and everything. Cleveland had to. They've got to show, this new administration's got to show their fans that they feel like, hey, we get you. We feel your pain. But now that they have Tyrod Taylor who can bridge it, now do you hedge your bets a little bit and say, I like this guy or this guy? Maybe I take a shot. The only problem you run into is the Giants at 2 are not a lock to not take a quarterback. The momentum feels that way. But Eli is 37. You can't help but have that discussion in New York. At 3, Indianapolis, we wouldn't expect to pick quarterback. Andrew Luck coming back, got Brissett last year. But can someone come in and deal with him? Yeah. Who might come in and get a guy that you really want? So that's what Cleveland has to be careful with. But as far as the rest of it, I think those quarterbacks are still in play. Kirk Cousins is going, when he decides where he's going to go, I think that's going to reset things, because he's going in to be an automatic starter, an automatic guy that people are going to look at and know. He's no longer going to be Kirk Cousins, you know, the try-hard guy. He's going to be Kirk Cousins' savior. And that's a whole different ball to carry around. And that's what Kirk's going to have to deal with going forward. But he'll be happy to deal with to the tune of whatever they pay him. You guys know that. But I think that'll reset things depending on where he goes. So at the top, I don't see much change right now, especially because, you know, Cleveland with Tyrod, that's just to get us to the next guy.
Charles Davis. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at CFD22. He's on NFL Network. Of course, mentioned he's Madden analyst, calls games for Fox, broadcaster. I mean, the man does it all. The man, the myth, the legend himself. Thank you so much, Charles. We could talk ball all day. We could talk about the draft all day, but we've got to let you get going here. But, Charles, thank you very much for being our Mr. Relevant on this week's edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. You take care. We'll talk soon.
Now it's time for Pick Six.
Special thanks once again to Charles Davis from NFL Network. Again, you can follow his coverage on NFL Network, NFL.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at CFD22. So now our pick six players where you can't go by the combine testing numbers. You can't go by the Spark score. You really need to just trust the tape. And what that means is, look, you know, they're not going to test off the charts from an athletic standpoint, but when you put on the tape, they look like they're football players who belong in the NFL. So, Fran, I'll let you kick things off here. You did an outstanding job with this in your combine preview pieces, where you went through every position, and you have trusted tape guys at every single spot. So I'm sure it was hard for you to whittle down all the way to three guys for this exercise.
It was. One guy, though, that really just kind of stands out to me as someone that is just tailor-made for this exercise is Derek Nnadi, the defensive tackle from Florida State. He's one of my personal favorite players in this draft. I've called him before a soul stealer at the defensive tackle spot. He's immovable at the point of attack, really, really good against the run. Do I think he's going to be an Eagle? Not necessarily. I think Timmy Jernigan kind of fits that role for the Eagles on the inside. I think he would fit that exact same position as a one technique nose tackle in a 4-3 scheme. But the guy is just so, so impressive. He uses his hands very well and just really tough to move in the run game. Athleticism, first step, not really his strength. That showed up at the combine. It wasn't a good workout. But overall, to me, I'm not worried about his combine numbers. I'm going to trust what I see with Derek Nnadi.
See, I'll go out of order here. I'll go with the same position.
Okay.
And you talk about first step quickness. Now, this player has it, but his workout at the combine didn't necessarily show it. And it's Tim Settle from Virginia Tech. He's someone who I thought would do much better at the combine from a testing and timing standpoint. He didn't put up great numbers. I think he was actually called one of the combine losers by Bucky Brooks of NFL.com and NFL Network. But to me, every time you see the highlights, he's great at getting off the snap. He has that first step quickness. You know, he's going to be a disruptive interior player for a team. I agree with you. I don't think maybe the Eagles per se, but you know, he's someone who I think is going to be able to find a home as someone who's looking for a defense to try to disrupt the interior of an offensive line. I think he's going to be a guy who fits the bill there.
Yeah, a lot of people were expecting him to test really well, especially for 340 pounds.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought he would test better than he did. One guy I'm going to go with, and I did not expect this guy to perform overly strongly at either in terms of the combine testing. MJ Stewart, the cornerback from North Carolina, Eagles fan in his bio.
There you go.
So already a step up in my book. But he's a little bit undersized. He's 5'11", 200 pounds. I really love watching the kid. He's a really instinctive player. He's a competitive corner. Played a lot on the outside, but he did play on the inside in their sub package. And I think he projects best as a slot corner at the next level. So watching him, I really view a guy that, yeah, he could play on the outside, but his best bet will be playing on the inside in the NFL level. He's got the experience doing it, which is a huge plus for guys transitioning into the NFL. He didn't run very well. He ran 4.54, which is not a good number for the cornerback spot, but in the slot, you can kind of get away with not having top-end speed as long as you've got that short area quickness, which MJ Stewart does have. So I see a guy that, again, ball skills, instincts. He's always in the receiver's hip pocket, and he's competing from snap to whistle. I'm a big fan of MJ Stewart.
You've been raving about him for a while.
I love that kid. To me, he was one of my favorite corners in the senior class. The senior class of corners was not very good. Remember how good that junior class was last year, so kind of took away some of the depth for this year's senior group. I would say MJ Stewart and Duke Dawson from Florida, two very similar players that I think are really kind of sat at the top of that senior class.
All right, my next guy, I'm going to look more from a special teams receiver standpoint here, Dante Pettis out of Washington.
That's a good one.
And quite honestly, it's because he hasn't been able to work out due to injury. So that's where you pretty much have to go back and say, you see the athleticism on the field. You saw the game-breaking highlights he was able to post for UW, the big numbers he was able to post. You pretty much have to say, you're going to be able to translate that from the college game into the NFL. And, you know, I look as the Eagles as a team that's going to try to get better in the return game this season. Doug Peterson has said flat out that the special teams unit has to be better. That's one area that he wants to improve. Maybe that's where Danelle Pumphrey comes into play for 2018. But if the Eagles are looking to improve through the draft, Dante Pettis might be an intriguing option. And his stock is probably going to slip a bit because of the fact that he's not been able to work out here in the pre-draft process.
Yeah, and I'll stay with that same theme. Another guy who hasn't been able to work out is Jack Sitchie, the linebacker from Wisconsin. He could have gone back for another year but chose to enter the draft, even though he is senior eligible, but missed the entire season with a torn ACL. The year before, he missed most of the season with a torn pectoral muscle. So we haven't seen much of Jack Sitchie, but from what I've seen from him on film, I see a guy who's a little bit undersized, but super instinctive. He's tough. Watching him in that game against Iowa in 2016 when he did tear that pectoral muscle, he tore it on the opening drive of the game very early on, and he played through the whole first half against the Hawkeyes with that right arm just kind of dangling to his side. I mean, it was a one-arm performance there for Jack Sitchie, and you just saw the toughness, the competitiveness. They had to drag him off the field, and he's a guy that really – he reminds me a lot in terms of his play style of Sean Lee, the star linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys. So
it's not a great comparison when you bring up the injuries.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing that just happens to – we talked about player comparisons earlier. That just happens to fit. But Jack Sitchie is a guy that is really, really impressive to me. I'm excited to see how he transitions to the NFL.
All right, my last guy, I'm going to go purely at the receiver position. And this is a player who was very productive for the Fighting Irish 2 years ago. Struggled with the quarterback position, not able to post as big numbers. And this is Equanimous St. Brown from Notre Dame. And he's someone who's 6'4". He's on the lighter end as being a 6'4 receiver. He's a very silky smooth route runner, and he didn't do all the drills at the combine. I think his name is kind of getting lost in the shuffle here.
I agree.
He's not a guy – he's not like Alshon who's going to win as a contested catch 50-50 guy, but silky smooth as a route runner. I think he works his way open. I think he just struggled with the transition at quarterback last season, and that's something that he's going to have to question or he's going to be questioned about throughout the draft process as he meets with teams during these top 30 interviews as we kind of wind down things here. But I think he's a guy who's getting lost in a shuffle who is more athletic than what he was able to show to this point. I think he's a guy who he's probably going to be probably a late day two, maybe early day three steal for a team.
Yeah, I'm going to be really intrigued to see where he ends up going because a lot of people were really, really high on him coming into this year. And again, like you mentioned, the production just wasn't there this year.
All right, so that's Pick 6 Players, where you need to trust the tape. Now we're going to get to your questions in our draft mailbag.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
Great questions, as always. And if you want to get your question asked and answered, guaranteed, each and every week here on the Journey into a Draft podcast, rate and leave a comment. It's as simple as that.
Number one.
Yep. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you want to go, just, hey, leave a comment, good or bad, leave your question, and we'll take it from there. So first question comes from Twitter, at JRod814, my apologies there. Would Orlando Brown fit with the Eagles blocking scheme if he were there at number 32, which at this point he's going to be there.
I think he's probably going to be there at 64 and probably a pick 100 as well when it's all said and done. I think just because of the combine workout, and it's not all about that, but since it was so historically bad, I think it's a bit of a stretch to see him go in the first couple of rounds. But just in terms of Orlando Brown, look, I mean, he's a big physical run blocker. There are some questions in pass protection. I think his feet were just good enough, especially when you compare that with his wingspan and how he's able to use that length. I think he's good enough to be able to play tackle in the NFL. I really do, and I think he could play either right or left side. All of his reps really have come on the left side during his career at Oklahoma. I still am a believer. I'm going to go back and continue to watch more. I haven't gotten to it yet since the combine has ended, but I still think Orlando Brown could play in the NFL.
But I look at at the Eagles' top tackles right now, Jason Peters and Lane Johnson. I look at the line from left to right, and it's athletes galore.
Yes.
So that's why, for me, even if you can say Orlando Brown can play in the NFL, which I agree with you, I think he can, it's different that he's just not going to be a first-round pick. He'll get selected at some point during a draft. But it's hard for me to envision him fitting into the scheme. Now, maybe if he's there in the fifth round and the value is too good, you take your chance.
Right.
You know, I have to go back and look more at him, but I wonder, I think of King Dunlap when I think of the big hulking.
I was just going to say, he's like a Juan Castillo type of lineman.
Yeah.
He's more like of that frame.
So, probably definitely not in the conversation, I would say, at this point at 32, which is crazy because before the combine, if he were available at 32, I think most teams would be pretty excited about that opportunity. All right, our good friend O-Snap, you asked, who would you take? All right, here's an exercise here. At number 32, the following players are available. Who would you take? Dallas Goedert, a tight end, Rashawn Evans at linebacker, the receiver DJ Moore, the tackle Colton Miller from UCLA, safety Justin Reed from Stanford, or the cornerback from Colorado, Isaiah Oliver. So a lot of intriguing options.
Yep.
Some good ones there.
Some good ones there. And there's going to be some good players there at 32. Of the group, I'm going to go with the player that we talked about earlier with Charles, and that's DJ Moore, the wide receiver from Maryland. He would be the guy that would intrigue me the most. I've said before, I think he's the prototype at Z receiver, a guy that can attack vertically, really still coming along as a route runner, but in a good way. I saw a lot of good flashes from him at Maryland. He's really good after the catch. I like his physicality. Off the field is all, you know, check marks and plus signs. I mean, he checks all the boxes to me, DJ Moore. Had a great combine. I think that'll help him a little bit. To me, I look at DJ Moore, and I wonder if he's going to be there at 32 at this point. But
someone's
got to
be there, Fran.
Someone's got to be
there. 32 for us, yes.
Dallas Goedert, Rashawn Evans, those guys I think intrigue me as well.
Rashawn Evans probably a slight edge, but that I might be looking at that from a need perspective and not so much as a BPA in that situation. I think it's pretty close, but looking at linebacker as it currently stands, you have Jordan Hicks coming back.
Sure.
Michael Kendricks, but Nigel Bradham said to become a free agent. You know, you did have Nate Gary in the pipeline. You have Joe Walker coming back. Najee Good, free agent as well. You know, again, I've said this for a couple of weeks on the podcast. I think they need an infusion of youth at linebacker. I don't know if it's going to be there at the end of the first round, but Rashawn Evans, if he's there, would be an intriguing option for me. I'm trying to think of the other ones. Isaiah Oliver, that's another one who would be a good choice for the Eagles. You start to wonder about, could you have too crowded a defensive backs room, especially at corner, more than anything else? Safety, you figure they're going to have to address at some point here.
Could you imagine if we said that 12 months ago?
I've thought about that before. And Howie has done this with a couple of positions. Right. You look at offensive line.
Sure.
I'll go on a bit of a tangent here. I've been thinking a lot about Seattle, and a lot of people have been talking about how, you know, it's the end of an era. Legion of Boom has pretty much been dismantled. You know, Richard Sherman, you know, obviously the face of that group, you know, being released and signing with the 49ers. And a lot of people point to, it was ever since that Russell Wilson got his second contract. And Howie Roseman was asked at the combine, flat out, how are you guys preparing for Carson Wentz's eventual second contract? Because it is coming sooner than later. And Carson, or Howie, said that he is studying the teams that have had to go through this and how they build the teams. To me, with Seattle, I just don't think they got certain positions right. And I look at the offensive line, and I think that was always a question mark spot for that team in the last couple of seasons. And I bring up that in particular because the offensive line was a question mark for the Eagles because they had invested in the draft. Well, all of a sudden, you get Samuel, you get Vitae, you sign Brandon Brooks, you get Wiz. All of a sudden, you've got one of the better lines, if not the best offensive line in football. You know, at the beginning of training camp last year, cornerback was the big position of need for the Eagles, and it's been drastically overhauled. They get the trade for Darby. You know, Sidney Jones works his way at the end of the year into the rotation. Jalen Mills has a great second season in the league. Rasul Douglas shows flashes as a rookie. It's amazing that, you know, you could say the same wide receiver going into last year's free agency period. So, you know, the one thing you have to credit Howie for is they know how to recognize the weaknesses and they know how to address them quickly.
Yeah, and I think just to wrap it up, I think when you look at when you have to pay Carson Wentz that contract eventually, when you have all those resources allocated to one position, you have to figure out, okay, where do we want to place value elsewhere on the roster, and where are the areas where we don't necessarily have to put so much in terms of the monetary resources.
Correct.
So there are going to be some positions that you're just not going to be able to dole out as much money for. For Seattle, they think that it's going to be the O-line. I don't anticipate that to be the case here in Philly. I would imagine that they're going to continue to place importance on the offense and defensive lines.
Certainly. So, Fran, number 100 is in the books.
That's right. Yeah. I think I've been on, I think, 99 of them. I think I may have missed one.
Did you
a couple
miss
years
one?
Ago. Yeah, I think so. I think you and Bo did one a couple years ago, maybe like the first or second
wow.
season.
I can't imagine this podcast without you.
Thank you.
You are the linchpin, the centerpiece of it. You know, Bo comes and goes, Alex Smith, you can have hosts, but there's only one Fran Duffy.
Oh, thank you.
At least. And believe it or not, this is the first one with a new producer, with Sir Ray Doyle, Chef Boy R.D. Does phenomenal cooking and an outstanding job producing from behind the glass, making sure to tell me to stop screaming into the mic. Does an outstanding work for us, and I know he had to step in for BT this week, but we appreciate it, right, to say the very least. So for all of us here, again, make sure to rate and comment. Leave us a question wherever you consume podcasts. That's going to do it for the 100th episode of the Journey to the Draft podcast. For Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. We'll be back next week.